The NCAA says college athletes continue to graduate at a higher rate than other students. The NCAA's latest graduation report released today shows that 79% of student athletes who entered college in 2002-2003 received diplomas. That matches last year's percentage as the highest ever. Northwestern hosts 11th-ranked Butler, and Illinois-Chicago is at Central Michigan on tonight's college basketball schedule. Nebraska is at St. Louis. IUPUI travels to Eastern Illinois. SIU Edwardsville visits Evansville. And Western Illinois is home against Truman State. The Bulls are off tonight. Indiana hosts New York in NBA action. And the Chicago Blackhawks embark today on a six-game road trip. It begins tomorrow night when the Hawks face the Calgary Flames. That's sports.
Today's programming is made possible in part by Ratio Architects, dedicated to defining spaces, creating places, and enhancing communities across the Midwest. On the web at ratioarchitects.com.
Several communities in central Michigan are polluted by dioxins from a Dow chemical plant. People there have known about it for 30 years. But residents are divided over whether the government should force Dow to pay for a cleanup that could cost tens or even hundreds of millions of dollars. In the third part of a series on Dow and dioxin, Sean Ali traveled to the area and talked with some of them.
Dow Chemical is not just some company in Midland, Michigan. It's part of life there. Dow employs thousands of people, and it pays for libraries and civic gardens. A high school football team is even named the Chemics. I talked with plenty of people in Midland who side with Dow over the dioxin pollution issue. One of them works right across the street from the chemical plant.
We're in my law office, and my house is two blocks south of us here.
Bob McKellar says Dow has been good for Midland, and as far as he's concerned, the federal government has been trashing the town.
Dow, rightfully so, takes the position that, you know, why are you always picking on us? We agree that we've done some of this, and we agree that we'll help clean it up, but then the EPA comes back and says, well, you're not doing enough, okay?
But the EPA says that they've been dealing with the issue for 30 years.
Well, that's because the EPA has, you know, had the fist out. They haven't come with a little bouquet of flowers and said, okay, folks, let's sit down and let's talk about this and let's get this thing done right.
McKellar says getting things done right means the government should pay for a big hunk of any dioxin cleanup. And it's only fair because he thinks pollution in the river and the soil is overblown, and the EPA is the one overblowing it. Downstream, fewer people work at the Dow plant. They see less benefit, but they live with more dioxin pollution.
Well, this is the tip of the Wassee River. This is my homestead.
I'm with Mitch Larson. He lives 20 miles downstream from Midland. His home is in a woodsy part of Saginaw.
When I bought this place, I was thinking that, you know, this would be a great place for kids to grow up. You know, as they grew up, it was the rite of passage to swim across the river. You know, and I'd swim alongside them, and, you know, you swim all the way across, get to the other bank, you know, and they always had them, I had to sign their name in the sand. All right, you did it, you made it.
The Tittabawassee River floods, and it left silt and traces of dioxin on Larson's yard. But he didn't know that until the state government tested his soil and found the dioxin. They even tested his pet chickens and the eggs he fed his kids.
They tested those also.
What did they tell you about them?
Don't eat them. Chickens eat the dirt. The dirt is where the dioxin was, and the eggs were full of the dioxin. So we'd been, last couple years, every egg we ate was like a little shot of dioxin.
He got rid of the chickens, of course, but he had to have a talk with his teenage girls. A report said the dioxin put them at risk for having kids with birth defects.
And when they were all tested for the dioxin, I told them that they were all high in dioxin. And I had the information about, you know, what it could, you know, the childbearing thing. It put them at risk, you know, for having kids. You know, it's not a good feeling.
Larson and 172 other plaintiffs sued Dow to pay for follow-up medical monitoring. The courts said no. 6 years after dioxin was first found on the property, Dow Chemical paid to clean and resod Larson's lawn. He says it looks great, but he worries another flood's going to leave behind dioxin. Right now, Dow and the EPA are negotiating an agreement that would make Dow clean up river sediment.
You know, if it takes them 30 years to clean this river up so that it's clean for the next 200 years, it'd be worth it. People are fishing, kids are swimming across the river to show that they're, you know, They're a badass?
Larson says he would welcome that future, even if it cost Dow a lot of money. For the Environment Report, I'm Sean Ali.
The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency is wrapping up a 60-day initiative looking at toxic air pollution around schools. They're looking to gauge the health effects linked to pollution exposure. Many of the schools were chosen based on how close they were to heavy industry. Gigi Dubon reports.
It's pretty much a given. Put a school near heavy industry and an interstate, and those kids are going to be breathing polluted air. What the EPA didn't know was just how polluted it would be. So the agency in August put air samplers outside of 63 schools in 22 states. One of those schools is Lewis Elementary in Birmingham, Alabama. As he does every day, Richard Gooden is waiting in the carpool line to pick up his granddaughter, who attends pre-K at the school. Not far away, near the basketball court, there's an air pollution monitor. Gooden, for one, was glad it was there. Living up the hill from the American Cast Iron Pipe Company, he's seen thick layers of dust settle on his windows.
See, I got a little white house with vinyl siding around it, and that, you can't feel the vinyl hardly.
Because of the dust that settled on it?
Yeah, because of the dirt that's settled on it coming from that pipe job down there.
Gooden has lived in that house for 43 years. His granddaughter spends most days there, and he worries about her health and his own.
I had a triple heart bypass a while back. I'm just wondering, is that air, you know, completely clean to breathe?
The EPA plans to have some answers. In Birmingham, the Jefferson County Health Department is collecting the data on the EPA's behalf. Corey Masuka is the county's senior air pollution control engineer. He says they're screening for about 100 different pollutants.
We looked for them and we found them.
So far, he says, only three of those, benzene, manganese, and acrolein, were found at high levels. Most concerning, acrolein levels were more than 100 times higher than what the government considers safe. Where does it come from?
Pretty much almost any type of combustion source, whether it's combusting coal or fuels from a plant or fuel in a car. It even emanates from cigarette smoke, so it's fairly ubiquitous.
But ubiquitous doesn't mean safe. In fact, excess exposure to manganese can cause brain damage, acrolein can damage the lungs, and benzene is a carcinogen. Masuka says the findings are not a major cause for concern, but Janice Nolan, Assistant Vice President for Policy and Advocacy at the American Lung Association, disagrees.
The fact that it's lots of places doesn't mean that it is not a big problem. It means that we have a lot of things we have to clean up.
And when it comes to schools, she says, industrial pollution isn't the whole picture. Diesel buses drive right up to the school doors every day. Inside schools, poor ventilation and even things like some glues can lead to health problems. Yet there are definite links between these air toxins and heavy industry. So Masuka of the Jefferson County Health Department says just knowing what's out there is a huge first step. Next, they'll come up with ways to reduce exposure. Things like having kids stay indoors during recess on days when pollution levels seem to be highest. Janice Nolan of the American Lung Association hopes monitoring will lead to stricter controls on nearby industry and maybe spark even a little bit of self-regulation.
Letting people know about what's in the air often raises public awareness and causes industry and other sources to rethink what they're doing and come up with less toxic ways to produce their products.
She says this research can galvanize communities into action. Most of the parents I spoke with at Lewis Elementary didn't know a thing about the EPA's monitoring program. But perhaps once the EPA gathers long-term data on schools across the country in the months to come, that will change. For the Environment Report, I'm Gigi Dubin.
Coming up this afternoon on The World from PRI, $50 is a lot of money in Afghanistan. One human rights worker says if an Afghan were offered $50 to plant a bomb, he might do it to feed his family. A new survey of Afghans reveals their biggest concern is the problem of being poor. Poverty and the Afghan war, that story in the day's news coming up at 3 o'clock this afternoon here on AM 580. It's 10 minutes before 3 o'clock. Nearly 15,000 U.S. citizens have turned themselves in to the IRS under an amnesty program aimed at uncovering secret foreign bank accounts. That's many more than the government was expecting, NPR's Wendy Kaufman reports.
The deal offered by the government was straightforward. If you came clean, disclosed overseas accounts, and paid up before last month's deadline, you probably wouldn't be prosecuted criminally. Seattle tax attorney Robert McCallum suggests that his clients who responded were motivated by both guilt and fear.
I think the IRS did an unprecedented job of publicizing this program and, yes, probably scaring taxpayers into compliance.
Those taxpayers are now paying billions of dollars in back taxes and penalties. Future taxes on those formerly undisclosed accounts will bring in billions more. Earlier this year, the Swiss government and banking giant UBS agreed to give the IRS the names of thousands of U.S. taxpayers believed to be hiding assets in Switzerland. The IRS says it is serious about piercing the veil of bank secrecy. The whole game, it says, has changed. Wendy Kaufman, NPR News.
You may never have taken a flight to Vernal, Utah, or Rockland, Maine, but you've helped pay for air service to those towns and many more under a federal program that subsidizes commercial flights to small airports. Some communities consider the $175 million program an economic lifeline. Critics call it wasteful. NPR's Adam Hochberg reports.
It's not often that you'll see a crowd this big at the airport in Hot Springs, Arkansas.
Hey, y'all gather around right in here.
But last month, scores of people crowded into the tiny terminal to help Mayor Mike Bush celebrate something that other airports take for granted. For the first time in more than a year, Hot Springs, a city with fewer than 40,000 residents, is being served by a commercial airline.
We've got airline service, y'all. Let's get my...
Now, if you're used to flying into bigger cities, the Hot Springs service may be a bit underwhelming. It's provided by a small carrier called Seaport, which offers 3 daily round trips to Memphis on a single-engine, 9-passenger propeller plane. But Airport Director George Downey says even that level of service is a big deal for Hot Springs community leaders.
It's very important for economic development because it is something positive that they can answer to any company wanting to relocate. Usually that's the first or second question on any questionnaire, do you have local air service?
Twice this decade, other airlines have started commercial flights to Hot Springs, only to discontinue them for a lack of passengers. So why is Seaport trying again? Partly because the company is getting a federal subsidy to do it. Hot Springs is among about 100 small cities in what's known as the Essential Air Service Program. That means airlines can receive hundreds or even thousands of dollars in federal subsidies for each passenger. Seaport CEO Kent Crayford says his company is getting more than $1 million a year to fly here.
One thing about the Essential Air Service Program is that the risk is mitigated by the subsidization of the air service.
But without the subsidy, there's no way you're here, right?
Without the subsidy, we wouldn't have taken the gamble to initiate service, no.
The Essential Air Service Program dates to the 1970s, when Congress deregulated the airlines and wanted to protect rural airports. But over the years, the subsidies have steadily grown and attracted their share of criticism. Many cities the program serves, including Hot Springs, are within about an hour's drive of bigger airports. And aviation consultant Michael Boyd says many of the flights are unnecessary.
If you're looking at a small community that is literally 150, 300 miles from a nearest airport, well, maybe you need to look at Essential Air Service. But when you're looking at something like Manistee, Michigan, where it's less than an hour to Traverse City, or Pueblo, Colorado, where it's 45 minutes to Colorado Springs, that's a waste of money.
Indeed, it's not unusual for subsidized flights to be mostly empty. Pueblo's million-dollar subsidy, for instance, funds fewer than 12 daily passengers. But efforts to reform the program have fallen flat in Congress, where Democrats and Republicans alike have guarded the money that flows to their airports. Ernest Istook is a former congressman who's now with the conservative Heritage Foundation.
Many members of Congress realize their communities are taking advantage of a bad system, but they feel they have no political choice other than to try to perpetuate it.
Here we go. Hey! Yeah!
As Hot Springs officials cut the ribbon to inaugurate their service, they sidestepped political questions about the subsidies. But local gas station owner Ike Iqbal says he supports them. He says he'll take advantage of the new flights rather than driving to bigger airports in Little Rock or Dallas.
We pay tax, so that's my tax money, and the government is helping, so they can help us and make a little money so our economy can survive.
So far, Seaport's Hot Springs service hasn't been hugely popular. In fact, there have been days since the startup when the airline hasn't carried a single passenger. But the company projects it will eventually sell about 7 tickets per flight and says the $160 round-trip fare, plus the $1 million a year in government money, will make the route profitable. Adam Hochberg, NPR News.
There are pets, and then there are exotic pets, like monkeys. Commentator Amy Guida offers legal advice to those who are thinking about the latter in this week's edition of Legal Issues in the News.
Perhaps you watched the cable television program titled My Monkey Baby. Perhaps you were smitten by advertisements showing a monkey clad in a frilly dress and accompanied by two people parents, one of whom swears she's his daughter. Perhaps you were even drawn to the internet, where you found a wedding photo of a bride, a groom, and a little monkey come between them, looking more like a shrinky-dink than a bridesmaid. Here's some legal advice before you're drawn to a monkey's siren song. Turns out that that whole Curious George thing isn't just fiction. Those who barrel into getting a monkey can absolutely end up with a life that's a barrel full of them, and not in a good way. In the interest of full disclosure, I'll admit that I am not one of what ABC News put it 15,000 monkey owners in the United States. But anyone thinking of cute little monkey ownership needs to hear of the bad times, too. Those times that make Stephen King's Cujo look like a warm and loving addition to the family. This much is clear from reading pet monkey cases. Pet monkeys have been around for years, but the cases involving them, at least, seem to have peaked in the 70s and 80s. All clearly spurred on by the successes of Planet of the Apes and The Monkees. A case from California perhaps best sets the tone for any discussion. 3 to 4 weeks before the monkey attack, the court wrote, the plaintiff heard noises emanating from the monkey's apartment, including screeching, screaming, cheeping, howling, squealing, and cooing sounds, as well as thumping, bumping, and banging. Shortly after, the court explained, the monkey attacked the woman and severely injured her head and her right hand. Such injuries would be doubly bad if an Iowa court writing in 1998 was correct that monkey bites have a very high risk of infection and that monkeys themselves can carry diseases like tuberculosis, salmonella, and Ebola. 2 years later, a New York court refused to consider a monkey's good behavior because it wrote the city health code prohibited monkey ownership, period, regardless of a monkey's angelic qualities. In deciding that, the court may have heard about the Oklahoma pet monkey who, though playing without incident with more than 100 children, was a little sulky and in a bad humor one fateful day. Or the Texas monkey named Mr. Jim, who, when given cigarettes, got nervous. Now, it's true that an Illinois court more than 20 years ago showed that it had a soft spot for pet monkeys. The court, when forced to choose between a lacking and un-